Ready? We'll call House Education together, March 13th. It's 8:05. We have today a briefing coming from the Department of Law, and I see the Department of Ed is here to talk about the lawsuit, or what can be talked about in the lawsuit anyway in Ketchikan, and just to get us up to speed. It was a late night last night, so we asked the Department of Law to use small words and talk slow. If you would come up, but I'm going to, Representative Ortiz is in the audience, and Representative Quito, and I would ask them to come up and join us, and if you would work with us, if the members show up, I want to squeeze in, but if you set up here, then you'll have access to the mics if you have questions.
Good morning.
And what I would like to do, rather than, because this is an issue that's been of interest to this committee and to a lot of people around the building, what I'd like to do is let you make a presentation, and we will ask questions if you want us to ask questions at the point that you're at in your discussion. But my preference is that you get the briefing on the record on the minutes, and then we'll go to our questions. So for the committee, that means if you have questions, please, if it makes sense, write it down and we'll go back to it. If it's something, where are we, that kind of thing, go ahead and interrupt me. It's no big deal. But we, okay, got the idea. If you would, identify yourself for the record and please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Rebecca Hatton. I'm an Assistant Attorney General in the Labor and State Affairs section of the Department of Law. Thank you. And on the phone is Catherine Vogel, who is also counsel of record in the Ketchikan Gateway Borough case and works in our Anchorage office. Because I'm in the room, I'll go ahead and make a short presentation to the committee, but Ms. Vogel is equally as available for questions.
Okay, yes. I have her online for confirmation that she's there. Before you proceed, like I say, we were up late last night. Would you call the roll, Lori?
Representative Seaton?
Here.
Representative Vasquez? Representative Culver? Representative Drummond?
Here.
Representative Christ Tompkins?
Here.
Representative Reinbold? Chair Keller?
Here. And I want to just, for the record, again, joined by Representative Quito and Representative Ortiz.
Sorry. Oh, thank you. It's my intention to provide the committee with a little bit of procedural history on this case, walk you through what's happened to date, give, as best as I'm able, the current status of the lawsuit, and to walk the committee through the three main constitutional claims that were brought by the Ketchikan Gateway Borough against the state. The Ketchikan Gateway Borough filed suit against the state originally in January 2014. The lawsuit alleged that the required local contribution, which as you all well know is an element of Alaska's public school funding formula, violated the Alaska Constitution. In February and in March of 2014, both parties to the case, the state and Ketchikan Gateway Borough, asked that Judge Carey, who is the assigned judge in Ketchikan, grant summary judgment in their favor. And summary judgment is a mechanism for resolving cases where there's essentially no issues of material fact to be resolved. And while there's plenty of disagreement about what the law says in this case, there wasn't any disagreement between the parties. There were no contested facts. It was purely a question of law. And so both parties had an expectation that the case would be resolved on summary judgment, which it was in January 2014. Judge Carey ruled on those cross motions for summary judgment and issued final judgment in the matter in January of this year. And I'll be explaining what the court order says in more detail shortly, but Judge Carey's decision found in favor of the Ketchikan Gateway Borough as to one of their constitutional claims and in favor of the state as to several other constitutional claims. But ultimately, the effect of the order was to hold the RLC, the required local contribution, in violation of the Alaska Constitution. Also in January 2015, the state requested that Judge Carey stay his ruling because the state had filed an appeal with the Alaska Supreme Court. In February, late February of this year, Judge Carey declined to do so. He denied the state's request for a stay. And once that happened, the state informed the Alaska Supreme Court about that development and requested that the Supreme Court stay Judge Carey's ruling until they'd had an opportunity to hear and decide the case. And very timely for our purposes, the Supreme Court granted that motion 2 days ago on January 11th. So I guess that brings us essentially up to speed as of 2 days ago. And so at this point, I'm going to loop back and talk about each of those constitutional claims that are a part of the lawsuit. Again, this is a challenge to the required local contribution, which requires municipalities to contribute towards the operation of its local school district at the equivalent of a 2.65 mill rate. And statewide, that what that actually looks like, municipalities pay, on average, approximately 16% of the basic need costs of education in their local school districts. Just to provide a real-world example with numbers, in FY 2014, the Ketchikan Gateway Borough's RLC payment was about $4.2 million, and state aid to the Ketchikan Gateway Borough was approximately $22 million. So that's the breakdown of the approximately $25.2 million that comprised basic need for Ketchikan. And the lawsuit claimed that the required local contribution violated three separate constitutional provisions: Article 11, Section 7, which is the dedicated funds prohibition; Article 9, Section 13, which is the Appropriations Clause; and Article 2, Section 15, which is the Governor's Veto Clause. And if you'll bear with me, I'm just going to quote a little bit of constitutional language for you. This is the dedicated funds prohibition. The proceeds of any state tax or license shall not be dedicated to any special purpose except as provided in Section 15 of the article, or when required by the federal government for state participation in federal programs. This provision shall not prohibit the continuance of any dedication for special purpose existing upon the date of ratification by the people of Alaska. And the purpose that underlies the dedicated funds prohibition can be stated pretty simply. It's intended to prevent earmarking. It's intended to prevent a situation where a new tax is created and the proceeds of that tax is dedicated or promised to a specific purpose or outcome. The intent of the framers essentially was to maximize the legislature's ability to spend money where, in its estimation, it was needed at any given point in time. And in order to determine whether or not the dedicated funds prohibition has been violated, Alaska courts use a two-part test. First, they ask whether the funds at issue are the proceeds of a state tax or license. And secondly, they ask whether or not there was a dedication to a special purpose. And the state made a lot of arguments on this constitutional claim, but I'll sum up the state's position very simply. It's the state's position that the required local contribution is not a specific tax and that it's not state revenue. Judge Carey did not decide in favor of the state on this claim. He held that the required local contribution does violate the dedicated funds prohibition. As to the other two constitutional claims, the Appropriations Clause and the Governor's Veto Clause, they're interrelated. The Appropriations Clause concerns the legislature's authority to appropriate funds, whereas the Governor's authority, or the third provision, the Governor's Veto Clause, it has to do with the Governor's authority to either strike or reduce line items from an appropriation bill. The state's claim, again, also relevant to the dedicated funds issue, that the RLC is not state revenue, we believed was fatal to both of these other two constitutional claims. We argued, in essence, that the legislative authority to appropriate funds is limited to funds that come within the state treasury. And we argued that the governor's authority to strike or reduce appropriations is limited to appropriations that have been authorized by the legislature. And therefore, in the state's briefing, it was argued that the RLC, which is collected by, deposited in, and appropriated by the borough's treasury, as opposed to the state's, because of that fact, the required local contribution did not violate either the governor's line item veto or the appropriations clause. And as to these two points, Judge Carey sided with the state, dismissing both of those constitutional claims. Finally, Ketchikan Gateway Borough made a claim in a sumsit, which is a common law action for the recovery of damages. The intentionality behind it is basically to correct situations where a party has been unjustly enriched. But for your purposes, just think of it as Ketchikan essentially asking for a refund. During the pendency, right before the litigation and during the pendency of the litigation, the Ketchikan Gateway Borough made its required local contributions in FY13 and FY14, but they did so with letters saying essentially they were doing so under protest and would like its money back eventually should their claim and sunset be granted. Judge Carey rejected this argument and said that the state had not been unjustly enriched, largely because, again, the RLC never becomes state revenue and never comes within the power of the state treasury. And so that claim for a refund was denied. So again, quick recap of what the Judge Carey's order said. RLC was found unconstitutional as violating the dedicated funds prohibition, not in violation of either the Appropriations Clause or the Governor's Veto Clause, and finally Ketchikan's request for repayment of prior RLC payments was denied. So that takes us up to what happened Wednesday. And as a result of the stay issued by the Supreme Court, the state at this point can continue to enforce the public school funding formula as it was written in statute, as it was adopted by the legislature. But I really do appreciate the time today because it's important for the legislature to understand the issues raised here. And the state is very confident in its legal arguments, but it's certainly possible that the Alaska Supreme Court could come to a similar conclusion as Judge Carey did. And were that situation to come to pass, this is obviously an issue that would require considerable attention from the legislature in the future in a different session. So. That concludes my opening remarks, and I would welcome your questions, and Ms. Fogel is on the line as well. Thank you.
Any questions from the committee? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to make sure it was on the record right, I think that at one point it was stated it was January 11th. I think you meant March 11th of the date, just to make sure that there wasn't
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, thank you, and I apologize.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Before you ask your question, I'm sure some of us are wondering what the real impact is in money if this should go, you know, one way or the other. And David, if you would be thinking about that, you know, if you could give us some kind of an idea of the impact on the GF if this were to go against the state, but not right now, but just if you would be thinking about that, Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I'm a little confused in the, I was writing these down. If the judge decided that yes, it was a tax, and yes, it was dedicated to a special purpose, it seems that then to say no, it didn't violate an appropriations or a veto clause, I mean, if it was a special tax, are we saying that it wasn't a tax required by the state, or it wasn't a state tax?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, Judge Carey's order, and Ms. Fogel, I welcome your participation on this question. Essentially, the state's arguments felt that it was really dispositive that the money didn't come within the power of the state treasury, but Judge Carey saw it differently, and it was sort of through that distinction that he drew that he was able to come to the conclusions that he did. Kate, do you have anything to add to that answer?
Yes, thank you.
Kate, I was just going to say, identify yourself for the record, and please respond.
Sure. My name is Kate Vogel. I'm an assistant attorney general. I work in the appellate section at the Department of Law. And I worked on this case below and am working on it as well on appeal. In brief, Judge Carey's decision did not find it to be significant that the money was local money, locally raised and locally allocated. That was a distinction that we drew and that I anticipate we will continue to draw on appeal from previous dedicated fund cases. But Judge Carey found that that distinction didn't matter, and I think that that was how he distinguished between the application of the dedicated fund clause, but not the application of the appropriation or gubernatorial veto clauses.
Representative Keto?
Thank you. I think this might be a question for Ms. Vogel. So if we are looking at the decision by Judge Carey that identifies or that appears to identify the tax or a license can be local. I guess one of the questions I have is there's not a requirement that the funding that the local governments pay come from a tax or a license. I mean, theoretically, there could be a municipality that has an endowment that has earnings. They use those earnings to pay this local contribution. In that case, it wouldn't be a tax on the citizens of the local government. Is that the case?
Kate, if you would, each time you speak, give us your name. And the reason it seems a little silly, but it's easier for the recorder. Thanks.
Excellent. Through the chair, this is Kate Vogel, Representative Keto. I'm sorry if I ever miss who's speaking. It's a little bit hard for me to tell over the phone. But the answer to your question is yes, the state made that argument that while the statute gives an amount and that the required local contribution is and states that amount as being the equivalent of a mill rate, nothing in the statute dictates how a local community should raise that money, and it doesn't have to be a tax. Judge Carey did not accept that argument, but that was certainly a part of the state's position.
Any other question? Follow-up, Representative Keto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this is just a comment. I think you had asked a question about how much does this impact the state. And I believe that the amount of local contribution at the current time is approximately $220 million. That is the total amount that all municipalities contribute to education right now.
Any other questions? Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question for either of the attorneys. If the Supreme Court has granted a stay, forgive my rudimentary knowledge of the judicial branch, presumably that means the Supreme Court is going to take up the case and rule on the case. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins. For the record, this is Rebecca Hatton. Correct, yes. Both sides have already lodged the appeals. And again, developments in this case are late-breaking, but we have a scheduling conference this afternoon to determine due dates, essentially, with the Supreme Court. So the case will be taken up. And I expect the court, based on the short order they issued in granting the stay, that they intend to deal with the case in an expedited fashion.
Follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Craig Thompson.
Appreciating that you're about to take this up with the court, do you have any sense of what an expedited fashion for the Alaska Supreme Court could result in as far as a timeline?
Through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, I wouldn't speculate. Again, we could keep the committee apprised. We'll know more. We'll have more information about when the briefing and arguments from the parties will take place. But once all of that process is done, the Supreme Court is within its authority to take any length of time it deems sufficient to decide the matter.
Thank you.
If the Supreme Court agrees, will the local school districts then just be short that money? Is there a clear implication that it goes back to the state and the GF?
Representative Keller, I won't speculate what the Supreme Court might rule, but I would draw the committee's attention to the fact that although the Ketchikan Gateway Borough did not clearly challenge the required local contribution under the Education Clause, they did include language in their arguments about that the state had somehow abdicated its responsibility to fully fund education. And Judge Carey's orders on that point were perfectly clear. He said at several points in several different orders that the state does not have an obligation to fully fund education.
Okay. Could you comment, if you would, on the implications that are rather fuzzy about the impact aid, if that would have any, is there any nexus here?
Representative Keller, it certainly is an area of concern. The fact that the impact aid, Alaska is deemed to have an equalized equalized funding formula for purposes of federal impact aid. And as such, it is allowed to take into account 90% of the impact aid payments made to districts, which amounts to an approximate offset of state education funding of, I believe, between $69 and $70 million annually. And were the, it would be speculation to say if any revised formula passed by the legislature in the future, it's an open question whether or not it would be considered equalized by the Federal Division of Impact Aid. So that is an area of concern and an open question.
Yeah, I think both those questions really highlight what the legislature is up against if, you know, this goes one way. Did you have something, Representative Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have kind of a follow-up. And thinking beyond education, does a decision in this case impact other payments that the legislature might require from municipalities, such as a PERS contribution or a match for a capital project?
Ms. Vogel, do you want to handle that question?
Yes, thank you. This is Kate Vogel through the chair. I'm not quite sure, actually, who that question
came from. It was Representative Keel. I'm sorry, Kate. I mumbled.
My apologies. Through the chair, Representative Keto. Yes, a dedicated fund decision from the Supreme Court in this arena, particularly if it adopted an analysis similar to that of the Superior Court, could have further reaching implications for other matching grant programs or other times when the state mandates a local entity put in some money in exchange for access to state funds. That is something that we argue would be an extension of the way the dedicated fund clause has been interpreted in the past. Of course, you know, how much of an impact the decision has would really depend quite a bit on what the Supreme Court decides, how it words its decision, and so as a result, it's somewhat unknown. But certainly, the dedicated fund provision it has a lot of implications beyond the education arena. So the state's position has been one of trying to highlight to the court all of the implications of ruling that this is a dedicated fund.
Thank you, Kate. Representative Seaton has a question.
Thank you. Kind of on that same line, are we talking about like the 70-30 reimbursement rate for debt that incurred? Would that be at all implicated in this?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I'd probably just echo Ms. Vogel's comments on that point, that that was an area of concern, not specifically 70-30 grants, but other joint municipal state participation type programs that are currently in statute. That was a significant part of our argument in the lower court, that it was an area of concern for us that that sort of joint participation program could be endangered by this by an expansive interpretation of the dedicated funds provision that encompassed the RLC. And again, it really remains to be seen how the Supreme Court would decide or word a ruling.
Follow up, Representative Seaton.
And on that, is the PERS participation, is that one of the things the state is arguing would be an expansion, or is that on the table at all as far as the arguments go?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, that wasn't a, Kate, correct me if I'm wrong, that wasn't a particular area highlighted in our briefing to the lower court. And as to our briefing at the Supreme Court, we haven't done it yet. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes. Could you briefly, I don't know if you can do it briefly, but summarize in layman's terms the three parts of the Constitution that the Ketchikan borough based their lawsuit on or tried to argue the points on and how they relate to the case, those three different parts of the Constitution?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I'll do my best. Again, the first and I suppose I've spent the majority of my time talking about the dedicated funds prohibition. Yes. So that was the first constitutional claim. And again, that's that sort of constraint against earmarking of labeling, of identifying a particular source of income to the state and then tying it to a particular outgoing source or project. And again, its connection to this case was that the Ketchikan Gateway Borough is argues that the required local contribution violates that constitutional provision. And then there were the two associated claims, the appropriations clause and the governor's veto power, both had to do with respectively the legislature's ability to approve appropriations and the governor's ability to basically use his line item veto power. And Ketchikan's contention that this was a dedicated fund sort of implicated those other two clauses, because if the conclusion was this was a state tax, the fact that the money moved directly from municipalities to local school district, their argument was that that somehow violated both of those constitutional provisions by unconstitutionally skirting the respective power of the legislature and power of the governor. I don't know if that helps clear it up.
Follow up, Representative Ortiz.
But Judge Carey ruled against Ketchikan Borough on those last two points, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
And so on the appeal, are all three issues being appealed, or is it just the dedicated funds portion that's on appeal?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, it's everything. Okay. Initially, the state appealed the point on which we lost, the dedicated funds prohibition, and then Ketchikan Gateway Borough cross-appealed the other two constitutional claims, as well as their assumpsit claim, that refund claim.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Considering our adjournment at, what is it, about 12:30 this morning, this has some interesting implications. Has the state considered what other states do in terms of education funding? For example, Alaska's school districts are dependent school districts. We rely on our local governments and the state to provide our funding. Many states have independent school districts that tax, that require a local tax contribution from their citizens, and actually go to the citizens for their tax portion and for their capital funds. And I can see this turning Alaska into a different sort of structure as how in terms of how our school districts function. And I'm not sure what the question is. It's simply an observation from my experience as a school board member in this state and having talked to other school districts around the country.
Thank you.
Well, if I could help you make a question out of that, Representative Drummond.
It's probably not the right time to be looking forward into the future, but suppose the state loses and school districts have to find another source of revenues. We could turn them into independent school districts looking to their local governments for taxes directly, and going to the ballot, for instance, locally. That's what happens in other communities.
I didn't mean to get in between you and the answer. I was just going to say I would like to know, it may be an added question to yours then, would be if that was part of the court considerations.
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, thank you for the question. To be perfectly honest, the state's focus was quite limited in the sense that our goal was defending the legality of our system as it exists now. The legislature has, within the confines of what the education clause requires, essentially plenary power to decide what education is going to look like in the state of Alaska. But we considered our task, because we felt like there were good legal defenses and continue to be good legal defenses of our current system. So our goal would be to defend, to legally defend the system as it currently is, which puts the legislature in better position to come at this issue from a policy perspective and decide what's best for the state.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I, this is Kate Vogel on the phone, can I supplement that answer?
Kate Vogel, go ahead, right ahead.
All right. Thank you. Through the chair and Representative Drummond, one other consideration on that issue is before statehood, there was, school districts had independent taxing authority, and they initially paid for their schooling and sought refunds from the territory. But the Constitution now does not give school districts taxing authority. So the state has taxing authority and municipalities have taxing authority, but for example, school districts in unorganized Alaska don't have taxing authority. So in terms of how it works right now, the tools that Alaska has as, at its disposal for funding of schools is state aid, aid raised from municipalities through a required local contribution, however they choose to access that money, and federal aid are the main sources. That said, we absolutely were aware of how much state aid Alaska schools receive and presented some evidence to the court about how Alaska falls with respect to some other states, but I certainly agree with Ms. Hatton that the focus in our litigation is about the legality of the dedicated funds provision, the legality of the required local contribution in light of the dedicated funds provision.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Drummond has a follow-up.
In other words, in layman's terms, let's figure this out first before we worry about what's going on down the road. And it sounds like it would take a constitutional amendment of some sort to change the funding source for schools.
Yeah. So thank you. That was
simply.
Kate, go ahead if you want to respond. I didn't mean.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Drummond. Yes, I think that that's right. I wouldn't want to speculate about need for a constitutional amendment to change things one way or another, but agree that it's not specifically being litigated yet. So. No need to go there yet.
Representative Drummond, thank you. It's a good question. It's a great context.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Seaton and Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm a little confused because we require all municipalities, boroughs, to use 100% fair market assessed valuations, and we have access to those valuations. So if it is a dedicated fund problem, couldn't the state just impose a 3.65 mil tax on all assessed valuations in the state and get that to the general fund, and then as the legislature appropriate money, it can fund education as it sees fit? And of course, oil and gas properties are separately assessed, and so they're in a different category, but doesn't that seem like the logical response if it is a dedicated fund problem?
For the chair, Representative Seaton, it would certainly be a solution available to the legislature. I wouldn't speculate on the parameters of what the Supreme Court might rule in the future, but we've always, in our briefing to the lower court, we really emphasized the benefit to local school districts in the sense that the money doesn't come isn't deposited in the general fund. It's allocated directly from municipalities to their local school districts, and all of the money goes directly to that purpose. And as such, we felt like there was significant benefit to individual school districts to have the required local contribution implemented the way it's written now.
I guess, Representative Seaton?
But I guess what I was asking really was, there's nothing that prohibits the state from having a property tax at whatever millage rate we would decide based on 100% fair market valuation, which is what is required of all assessments. At least that's my understanding in the state. Is that correct?
Through the chair, nothing that I'm aware of, and I'd welcome Ms. Vogel's participation on the question.
Through the chair, this is Kate Vogel again. I agree that would be a possible solution that I'm certainly not aware of any constitutional problems with. So certainly the way that was described, the idea of a state-imposed tax being deposited in the general fund and not pledged to schools, that would seem to be permissible under the dedicated funds clause, no matter what the court decides about the status quo and the current way the state does it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
It's a taste of discussions we may or may not get into in the future. Interesting stuff. Representative Ortiz.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, just for my clarification, did the Ketchikan Gateway Borough argue the issue of equitability between non-borrowed areas and borrowed areas for, did they argue that it was unequitable treatment? Did they integrate that into any of these different articles in the Constitution between how students in borrowed areas are funded by the state versus students in non-borrowed areas? Did they make that argument?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, they did not.
Okay.
With that, we thank you. I'm going to give opportunity for anybody in the audience, and I've kind of hinted that maybe David Teal would volunteer, but we'll see. And the department's out there, feel free. There's nobody else online that is there, but is anybody in the audience, would you like to testify? And David, do you want to testify, or would you rather not at this time?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but there's a lawsuit on, I would be speculating as well.
Okay, for the record, the response was because due to the lawsuit, it's probably best not to say anything at this time, and that's from our alleged finance, and I think that's a prudent approach and no problem at all. So is there, I guess with that,
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Seaton?
I think that the current system is better. I mean, I think it works well. I think that it got a little messed up when we went from 4 mills down to the lowest common denominator with that only 50% of the new property since 1999. I think any new assessed valuation was only assessed at 50% of the valuation, which I think really gave us a problem between equities in different parts of the state. So, but I don't think that we really have a huge problem other than the will to go ahead and say we're going to have a property tax at whatever value, whatever mill rate that is across the state, because that's basically what we do by requiring a local contribution at the 3.65 level. So it doesn't seem to me that the legislature is in too much of a box. It wouldn't mean that we'd have to change the system. We'd have to go to the general fund, but then the appropriation and the veto clauses would be available as well. So although I'm worried about the case and having to redo things, it seems to me that there are mechanisms without totally turning over the way in which districts are organized and taxation and all those things come through. I think that fairly simple solution is evident, that we could either keep it the same level or go back to the 4 mills that was previously throughout the entire state. If we are having, funding problems for local school districts. So I just wanted to put that out so that the public that are listening to this doesn't think that we are just absolutely without any way of going forward, no matter how the Supreme Court rules.
Thanks for that interesting point. But again, that's on an anticipated discussion that we're going to have in the future. So I'm going to, even though there may be other anticipated parts of that discussion, we're not going to go there right now. Is there any other final words here before we gavel out? Representative Sam Keto?
Chairman, thank you. I just wanted to say thank you for bringing this issue forward and allowing us to participate on the committee. It was very informative for me.
Thank you.
You bet. With that, we're adjourned.